attending a joint meeting of all cabinet committees today. So she asked that her apology must be noted. I hope the department is ready. If you are ready, we are going to hand over. Let me see just the program. We will start with the department, and then after that, probably pray for lunch, if lunch is available, and then we get to ESCOM and then SASOL. I got an indication from Mr. Govender that he would like to be excused at 3. So, it's fine. I think we will do that. I wonder who's was it Mr. Govender or was it another gentleman from ESCO the last time during the workshop? Who was it? Or is another executive who was just showing me signs that I have to catch a flight, so he's not here today. I'm sure there are problems with the flight for him to come here. I hope you are not going to do that. To just show me that, hey, this flying thing. Okay, can we get the DG?
Thanks, Chair and honorable members. Again, this presentation we did last time, but we will then run through it so that honorable members, then we are able to at least establish also or have enough time for the other presentations from both ESCOM and SASOL and the NGOs. So the department's overview will then be quickly run by Dr. Tulikumalo. His surname changed, Chairperson, as you explained earlier on, also on our side.
Honorable Edwards.
Yes. So. All right, thank you. Over to you, too.
Yeah, maybe if let me just wrap up probably for the purposes, so that it doesn't come out as if we want to have the same thing. In the last discussion, I think 3 or 4 issues arose which we said we must have a follow-up discussion on. The first one was the actual roadmap towards full compliance. We said we needed to have a proper roadmap which will show us or which will properly articulate the compliance and how are we going to reach that stage of full compliance. So the roadmaps was one of the issues that we said we need. We wanted to come up very clear. The second issue was the offset program, which I'm expecting that ESCOM and probably SASOL will then speak to them, because the offsets are an important program of trying to comply. But as we know that, you know, there are certain things that from the side of the big industry, there is a program that helps to reduce pollution. So we said we wanted to get the actual, because from the previous discussion it wasn't very clear the impact that these offset programs are making, first of all. Secondly, the financial commitments by industry towards the programs. So that is what we want to get very clear. And then there was an issue which was raised about full compliance with SO2. We said that from the presentation it did appear that it looks like a genuine concern that was raised, particularly by SASO. And we said that let's work around it, develop ideas, and have a presentation of how is this going to be complied with without generating waste and stuff like that, as it was presented here. So, because we said it shouldn't be a problem statement without any possible solutions to addressing the problems. And then, of course, the last issue is the actual applications that have been received. Before the last issue, there was an issue around ESCOM where the submissions was indicating that there are some of the power stations which are going to be extended beyond the period where it was suggested they will be completely shut down. And then that, of course, introduces some other complications. So we want ESCOM to also speak to that. Because if you extend a power plant beyond the stipulated time frames, it has got an impact on not only the air quality issues, but there are climate change implications in terms of us complying to the emissions trajectory that we have defined in our document as the department, as generally as government, and for which we have already made commitments on those climate change mitigation and adaptation scenarios. So those are the issues in summary. I might have less time, but this is just and of course I don't have all my documents here, but it's progress from the last discussion in the workshop. So as you do the presentation, Tuli, you must just keep that in mind. All right.
Thanks, DG. Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. Good morning, everyone. As indicated, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the presentation because it's an update from the presentation we had in November. And these are the points that the Chair has touched on, which we need to be responding to. But perhaps just to recap so that we can be on the same page with the legal requirements. The Section 21 was published in 2010, 1st of April, with the first compliance date being the 1st of April 2015, and then the new plans for all industries being the 1st of April 2020, except for those that will come new after that. The reason for the postponement was to allow for transition, I think I repeat that, for existing plants to come to compliance with the new plant standards. That was mainly the reason, with the understanding that the plants themselves are not the same size, the magnitude and the type of investments that are required are not the same. So some plants would need a bit more time than others to invest and come into the compliance as expected. And also, the process itself is regulated. An applicant must complete an air pollution impact assessment, must give a detailed justification of the reasons for the application, and they should have concluded a public participation process that is the same as the NEMA process for the EIA application. And then in terms of the applications themselves, They are submitted to the National Equality Officer, who happens to be myself at the moment. And the NACO, with the concurrence of the licensing authority responsible for that plant, would then grant or refuse the postponement. And the time frame for this postponement would not exceed 5 years. And such postponement could be reviewed from time to time if the ambient quality conditions seem to deteriorate after the postponement has been granted. So, but however, there's another legal provision that indicates that the NACO, with the concurrence again of the licensing authority, can, on good grounds, withdraw a postponement application, a postponement granted, if there are representations made from the affected plant themselves or affected communities, on good grounds, that is also a legal provision applicable. And we did receive 34 applications back then, and since that time we have received 20 new applications, and we supplied the list in the previous meeting of November. So one of the instructions was to find a sustainable solution for the compliance with SO2 between ESCOM and Sasol, as the chair has alluded. Just as a background, we did have obviously on informal discussions from time to time, but we had a meeting on the 17th of January, back to back with Sasol and ESCOM, to discuss what possible strategies they would have in place to address the SO2 emissions, and what action plans are available to find a long-lasting solution, bearing in mind that SO2 is one of the criteria pollutants and is significant in the Republic, even though it may not seem to others. So in the meeting, Sasol maintains that an assessment of the commercially available technologies has been done, and they're practically infeasible to implement at the existing plant. So they indicate that some of the assessed technologies include catalytic processes, sorbent injection, flue gas desulfurization. They conclude that none of these above technologies or any other technology that is available at the moment is viable for their operations. And the reason they state is unavailability of space in the nature of the process, the way the plants themselves were constructed back then when those legal requirements didn't exist. And so they are a recommendation, if I may call it that, was that the legal framework should allow for flexibility in terms of the SO2 standard, and they suggest we use Section 29 of the Equality Act, which is the pollution prevention plans that the mitigation team has used for greenhouse gases. The challenge with that particular...
Come again. Can you speak to that proposal again?
So the suggestion or recommendation from Sasol's side is that we change the law, basically, and use Section 29 of the Equality Act, which states that the minister may declare a substance a priority pollutant, and the emitter of that substance then has to prepare a pollution prevention plan for that substance, which will then say to the minister, I'm the emitter of this substance and I will reduce the pollution over a period of time, and what they would then do over time to reduce the emission of that particular substance, and then report regularly on at an interval that the minister would determine if she had declared that substance a priority, that the act, that's what it says in Section 29.
And that rolling postponement?
Pardon?
The rolling postponement? So basically it means the minister must declare that a priority and there must just be rolling until postponement.
That section of the Act, Chair, is not even about postponements. It would just be that's how SO2 is going to be handled in the Republic. And the challenge with that is that to change the law, because two plants in the Republic are not able to comply with, although they are significant emitters, our view is that there are far more emitters of SO2, and if you would declare SO2 a priority pollutant, then you change the regulatory regime altogether. And
we don't see it as justifiable action at this stage to change the law to accommodate two plans that say they will not come into compliance. And we also have the view, I think I've changed the wording a bit there, that the SASOL could do better in addressing these challenges associated with ESO to with the agency that they deserve. And did we have a way that we could handle this? But generally, to say the way to reach compliance is to change the law doesn't seem the intention that is understood to take us where we want to go. I will get to the issue of rolling postponement later on in the presentation.
Yeah, you're not audible enough. I don't know whether you're not speaking to the mic.
Yeah, it's always not speaking to the mic.
I don't want to keep on interjecting and say repeat.
I think, Chair, my suggestion was that the minister has, in terms of NIMA, the ability to appoint a panel of experts who then would be able to get the technological submissions of SASOL, the NGO proposals, and come to a kind of a options that say these are truly not, it would not be effective solutions, and these are the options that are available. Because I think it is burdensome for the air quality officers that make the decision on postponement to hear those reasons and prejudge before they get to the process of decision making. So we probably have to recommend that we be allowed that time to go through a technical kind of not feasibility, but where there is a conversation about exactly what practically, unfortunately, public enterprises is also here in the room today, to explore with a multidisciplinary kind of a panel. And from our side as government, we then have science and technology, public enterprises, energy, as well as maybe DPME and ourselves. But then have experts from the sector that could look at exactly what technological innovations are available, are they applicable in those areas. If they say that there are issues around the design of the site, would it really, whatever they have to retrofit, require more land than what they currently have, or would it need a complete re-engineering of the design of the business? So we would have to, because I think it is difficult to make the assessment of whether those reasons are valid or not until we give ourselves that opportunity. And also the NGOs have got specific views. They can then make their presentations to that committee so that their technical proposals are also assessed on an equal basis. And in that same context, we then arrive at understanding of what investment decisions would be required and so on, and whether these are acceptable or not. So that's the recommendation I have on that one, but not to amend the legislation. I don't think then we also have a good basis to arrive at that kind of a decision. Thanks.
Okay. We will come back to that. I think it makes a lot of sense to initiate a process that will come to a decision which is almost like evidence-based, looking at various options and so forth and so forth. So I think that will make sense. But of course, we need to caution that we don't have to put a lot of economists in there, because they will take decisions that are looking at the more like the other consideration than the environmental consideration. So I think it has to be a very balanced panel that looks at the the problem as it is and how it can be resolved. Unlike having a panel that will make an economic justification for whatever option that is suggested. I didn't know that there is somebody from trade and industry, public enterprises. We didn't do the introduction, so I avoided that because I know the majority of the faces in here. Can we get introduction if there are other people that don't ordinarily come to the meeting? Let's just hear who's here.
Chair, I thought that was a regular feature in your meetings. Mahola, acting DDG Energy from the DP.
Acting DDG
Energy.
The Department of Energy.
Public Enterprise.
Public Enterprise.
Yes.
Oh, you are welcome.
Good afternoon, Chair. My name is Nseki Mbono, the DDG responsible for economic impact and policy alignment at DPE, and the environmental compliance for within my responsibility for the portfolio.
Okay, thank you very much. Is there any other person? Doesn't know.
Public, do we?
The NGO.
Sorry. Do NGOs?
I know the NGOs donate. I saw the faces in the our colloquium. I think they were there. Most of the professor made a presentation the last time. We've got from, by the way, what is the organization? Center for Environmental Rights. I know the gentleman there. So the NGO sector, I know the faces. The gentleman in front here? Yeah? Or from ESCO? Okay. I thought it's only two from ESCO. Oh, couple, okay. All right, you are welcome. All right.
Chair, the renewable energy program, as we had, is already on course. So we are aligned with ESCOM.
Oh, okay. I saw something, was it yesterday? An announcement that the Minister of DPE has approved the next round of procurement, signing of contracts and stuff like that, which is something that has been outstanding for quite some time. I don't know whether what I read is the case or what is happening. We're digressing a bit on renewable energy, but of course it's something that has been in the committee discussion for some time. And we did notice that ESCOM was reluctant to sign those power purchase agreements. Can we just get a brief feedback from DPE, if there's any?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, it is correct. Minister did give up Section 54 approval for ESCOM to sign the PPAs for the outstanding rounds that had already been procured. And to conclude those PPA with the 37 bidders that were announced. And then from this point on, I think we will be guided by the conclusion of the IRP in terms of, you know, where the program goes. And I think the DOE will then provide guidance going forward in terms of the program.
Okay. All right, thank you. Can we proceed with the presentation?
Thank you. In the meeting with ESCOM, ESCOM acknowledges that there has been no significant reduction of SO2 emissions from the power stations over the past 30 years, and they maintain that ambient air quality monitoring network shows that there is general compliance with ambient SO2, which is not, doesn't seem to be the case from our stations when you look at the daily limits. They have proposed that they will install FGP in Medupi and Kusile, which Kusile is already there, and no further SO2 abatement technologies for all the remaining power stations have been done, except that there has been some consideration and costing
given for Kendall and Matimba as per postponement decisions granted. Emphasis is being placed that the agreement has been reached, that the last one of the affected plants is guaranteed for 50 years, with 8 of the power stations facing decommissioning by 2033. And so, looking at the cost of an FGD, it would not be economically viable to purchase billions of investment for a plant that you are shutting down. So we did ask for an indication in terms of what would be done to these power stations that will not be decommissioned by that time. Chair, from the instruction we received from the committee, we are looking at a regulatory tool that will remove the problem we face currently of rolling postponements. So it would be, in terms of what a postponement should stand for, that once off to say you are postponing because you are going to come into compliance, and then to also look at the facilities that will not then come into compliance and having to come out of the system at some point. And those discussions are underway because we have objectives for ambient air quality compliance, that if we leave plants in non-compliance into the future perpetually, we are not going to achieve. And constitutionally, therefore, people will not be enjoying their rights to air that is not harmful to their health and well-being. Chair, I just have...
Can you please... You know, I'm picking up, I don't know whether it's a contradiction, on ESCOM plans for compliance with SO2. The third bullet point on the FGD, ESCOM is proposing that the FGDs be undertaken to deal with the SO2 in Medupi and Kusile. But yet on the second page, the indication is that it's not having it as an abatement technology because it's unaffordable, something like that. How do you reconcile these two statements? What is the actual proposal by ESCOM?
Okay, I understand, Chair, that is for the other power stations, the old power plants, where they say that those are due to retire in 2030 and therefore not affordable to invest in FGD technology. So that's it's not a contradiction, is that on the new plants they are investing in FGD, which is the Medupi and Kusile. And then she was also saying Kendall and Matiba was not considered, but they have the limitation of affordability on the ones that are being planned
the
for decommissioning. Yes.
Okay. So we don't know the age. Who are this age?
It's in the table. I was just giving an overview. I'll get to the table. The age is Machuba, Duva, Tutuga. ESCOM can correct me.
Oh, you're coming to that list.
Yes, I'm
okay,
coming.
Okay, now let's allow you then to go through the presentation.
Yes, I was getting to the
yeah.
So Medupi, in terms of SO2, I think ESCOM will give a detail on that. But according to the postponements that were granted, because they were still going to commission the units and then have the technology, our analysis shows that they are on track for that. Majuba, there's a problem with the low NOx balance, but the detailed information on the reasons for that were not provided to us, which I believe ESCOM will allude to today. In Duva, the risk
was that units 4 and 6 will not be able to meet the emission standards by the 1st of April 2020, and ESCOM plans to request monthly emission limits for those, because the standards themselves are daily limits. And then for Tutuga, delays due to the procurement challenges will pose the risk that the last unit may not comply with the 2020 standard. For Kriel, ESCOM also reported delays in procurement, challenges associated with the National Treasury processes for procuring, and however, the technical engineering design has been sought to resolve some of the challenges. For Matla, the risk is that the units will not be able to meet emission standards by 2020, and ESCOM plans to request monthly emission limits for those units. And the last unit is at risk of not complying with the 2020 time frame as well for NOx. Hootfly, they said the investments planned are on track. There was no update on the Komati one. And Camden, there's no further commitment in place due to the fact that the facility has a short lifespan remaining. Acacia, there's no problem there. ESCOM for ANOT is saying that no decisions have yet been made as to when the decommissioning of the power station is going to be, and then that leaves the matter open. For Camden, ESCOM is saying that no decisions have been made as to when the decommissioning of the power station is going to be as well. Hendrina, the same, no decision on decommissioning. For Kenda, PM emissions will be reduced to the installation of the high-frequency transformers and the refurbishment of the electrostatic precipitators and SO3 plants, dust handling plants. No mention is made, however, on the plans to comply with the SO2 limit by 2025, which was the decision given in the postponement. But we did, in the last meeting, see a costing related to that. And perhaps, Chair, just to indicate that this is a very big power station in the high priority area, and it's a continuous source of very high amount of SO2 in that area. And so we think that it should be prioritized for investment, because there is also no decommissioning date attached to that. So if you look at the impact of SO2 to the generation of PM2.5, which is high health impacts, you would then expect that investments should be made in this plant to come into compliance. Letabo, extensive repairs have been performed on the ESPs to repair the damage caused by the backlogs in November, and PM emission performance has improved as a result. PM emissions should be further reduced through the installation of high-frequency transformers and upgrade of the SO3 plant and the refurbishment of the electrostatic precipitators and dust handling plants. Matimba is another power station that we think should be prioritized for FGD, because it is also not planned for decommissioning according to the plans given to us. ESCOM says they will reduce PM emissions through the installation of high-frequency transformers again and the refurbishment of the ESP, SO2 plant, and the dust handling plants. Port Rex, not applicable. I don't know, Chair, if I should go into the other facilities of Shell and the others that we were granted at the time, or I can just go straight to Sasol.
How many pages of Shell and others?
How many pages? Quite a bit.
We'll come back to them. Let's go to Sasol.
Unfortunately, I lost my slides for Secunda. I don't know what happened, but I think Sasol can cover that in their presentation. In terms of this Sasol back, I was told also by Renel that I mixed the Sasol back and Sin Fuels slides, so I've corrected that to be Sasol back. Steam Station 1,
SASO said they have technical challenges in coming to compliance with that. I think we have spoken a little bit about the SO2, and I think in their presentation they will give detail on that, as well as the Fosting Station 2. This is, I think, a repeated slide. The caustic incinerator, the project is being run in parallel with the project investigating technology options for the high sulfur pitch incinerator, and a number of alternative solutions are being investigated. Although third party waste removal solutions currently appear promising, this solution is dependent on the results of the trial burns. And for the heavy end B incinerator, the report is that the details is that the incinerators face significant space constraints, and the age of the current technology is such that retrofitting abatement technology is physically impossible, and alternatives are being investigated to meet the existing and new plant standards. So, as I say, I don't have my slides on the Secunda plant. But I can move on to the offset program that I have slides for. Okay. So in terms of the progress and the offset generally for both Eskom and Sasol, I think a lot of studies were done to ensure that whatever is being proposed and implemented in the people's homes is most likely to reduce the targeted pollutants, which is SO2 and PM lastly, in those areas. And so at this point, implementation has started, and the two facilities have had to share notes on what works in these locations. And so I think there has been a lot of innovation in this space, and I'm not going to steal their thunder. They will present what sort of solutions they've come up with to reduce emissions. And it's safe to say that for us, we see that implementation is taking place. And where there are measurements, we can see that even the temperatures in the people's homes improve, which means obviously there would be less requirement for heating if the house is not as cold as it used to be. So I'm not going to the specifics per time frame, because overall there is implementation, and it, I believe, is covered in their presentations. Except to say here that I think there has, for us, not prescribing the specific technologies has seen quite massive innovation coming into the space, and because the people have to be consulted. If you are going to go into people's homes to install anything, you must consult them. They have given their preferences, and it seems to be a program that is working well, and at the moment there has been implementation. But some of the proposals have not been feasible. For example, there was a road that Sasol had proposed to put specific gravel on that has less dust when you drive over, but the ground itself, the soil itself could not support the implementation of that. So we then have to look at something else. And that then says that flexibility to say this is a pollutant that we want to address, and find other ways of addressing that particular pollutant, as opposed to specifying how that pollutant should be addressed itself. And of course, it's also about, in this particular location, what are the challenges? So for example, in the Zandela area, domestic burning of coal and wood and waste in people's homes, even in people's homes, this is a major issue. Meanwhile, in the Sasolburg area, the challenge is uncollected waste. So for those two types of locations, you would have different types of offset projects. So you have stoves in the homes, insulation of houses, putting in of ceilings and all of that. But when it comes to the other side where you have waste collection, which is the problem is waste not collected, that's why people burn it. Then you, Sasol has given the people skips to put the waste there, and the skips are being collected, and it's working because there's no longer waste that is lying uncollected that people then have the pressure to burn. So this is the program that we have worked very closely with the licensing authorities, because it sits in their jurisdictions and they have the better understanding of what their domestic problems would be in those different jurisdictions. I think the other issue that was raised in this in the previous meeting was the issue of cost or differences on how much ESCOM is spending on the offsets versus how much Sasol is spending. And it should be covered in the presentation. We did in the preparation meeting indicate that they should give specifics of what it costs per intervention. But perhaps the other thing to note is that when you are doing an offset for Sasol, it's two plants and their jurisdictions that you are addressing, because it's Sasolburg and Secunda. But ESCOM stations are far more in number, and so their impact zone would be larger than your Sasol stations, and therefore the difference is on the amount of money that is spent to address the problem in the different areas. This is the end of my presentation, just for the committee to note where we are in the discussions around SO2 and the roadmaps that industry has provided and are providing constant progress reports on, which they will give further detail on the specifics and the offset programs and their progress as we have implemented it. And first, DG, I can hand over back to you.
Roadmaps. Did you speak to the roadmaps?
When I was talking about the specific technologies, it's what is in the roadmaps that were submitted to us. When I was talking about the FGDs, the ESPs, the fabric filters, and so on, those they had said on this date we will implement this technology, and so on, and so on.
How did I miss that? Did I miss it or?
So it's part of the report on the table.
But
so
these are the offsets.
And the earlier table, they have dates also. They had progress when they said they would meet some of the combined.
So maybe DG, to start with the first one, the ESCOM, the first one, it says Medupi and SO2. And the progress is that the FGD, blah, 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 that's what's in the roadmap.
Okay. Okay. I guess the only thing that was not adequately responded to, I don't know whether it's ESCOM will help us with that, is this whole question of rolling postponements. Now, there is a proposal to introduce regulatory whatever whether it's going to be done in the form of regulations or whatever, but there is a proposal to deal with that. So, am I getting a message that the issue of rolling postponements is not is still being looked at? Is that the message that we're getting?
I think I could say, Chair, it's not desirable, but we need, because the law provides for postponements, we then have to look at those cases, because the applications will come and you need to still deal with them. That's why I think if we first understand what the nature of the problem is and have an independent report on exactly what is a constraining the retrofitting in the various operations, and objectively have that as an open discussion before the air quality officers deal with the applications individually.
Okay. You want to respond to this?
Yes, I wanted to just add that the intention of the law was not to have rolling postponement. The understanding was that you would invest towards compliance. We are given that time, you implement the technology, you come into compliance, we don't do postponement again. But because there was no avenue to then say those that should then come off the system completely, how then should those be dealt with? So I think that's the discussion that I'm saying, Chair. After that instruction, we are going to be having internal discussions and obviously approval from our principals if that's the route. But what we are seeing at the moment is when industries pick up and then compliance in their plant, they then apply for a postponement, which was not the intention of the regulation. The intention was to provide a transition towards full compliance, which is where we seem to have been, because it was open, the provision itself is open to coming back to apply. That's what we are then looking at.
Yeah, because it's an issue which arose also in our last meeting, to say at some point there must be compliance. Because it's not ideal, because if you look at some of the presentations, the underlying assumption is that we are applying now, but we will come back and apply again. And as a result, there will be pressure for that application to be considered, because there will be an argument about the impact on the economy and all such issues. So, hence I was asking a question, what do we do with this rolling postponements? But I guess we'll then develop a way forward later when we've received all the presentations. Can I ask if there's any question to the department? Honorable Peden? Then Honorable Khadem.
I think, thank you, sir. I think there'll be, I'll save my questions for when we have the Eskom and Sasol, but the one I wanted to just ask Dr. Tuli is that on page 5 of your presentation, it says Eskom maintains that ambient air quality monitoring network shows that there is generally compliance. Who's monitoring? Is it an internal monitoring network, or who's? Because we're repeatedly told that the monitoring networks are not working efficiently. So if you just answer that one, because I'm of the my understanding is that Eskom have the internal ones, but the results are not shared so easily.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just need clarity on the two issues. One, Chair, is about the establishment of this technical committee or team of experts who will be looking into all these issues of retrofitting of these plants. And I would like to ask the DG through you, Chair, how practical is it possible to have this before the stricter emission standards are implemented? Because the period is on the 1st of April 2020, which is around the corner. How practical is it to establish this committee at the same time to look at this work that needs to be done? Excuse me, Chair. To look at the work that needs to be done in order to make proper recommendation before the MES of 2020 starts. That would be my first question. The other one, I saw on the slide when Doctor was giving a presentation, I couldn't help to notice that 75 skips were purchased, but not assigned of the top ultras on site. I don't know whether I'm getting lost there. How are they removing this debt on the skips if they don't have triple trucks? I just need clarity on that.
Okay.
Chair, just three issues. The first will relate to the slide that is on page 5, the top one, almost to what the Honorable Padden was asking. Just to check whether the department confirms what ESCOM is maintaining to say that the ambient air quality monitoring network shows that there's general compliance, whether the department confirms the same thing. The second one, it will relate to offset programs. Just two things there. One is that when we interact with particularly the NGOs, they all at times claim that they don't agree with the programs. There's been no public participation or consultation to what these programs are. Just to check who signs these programs off. Is it the department agreeing with either ESCOM or SASOL, or those the industry decides on its own and implement? The last one on offset. The question Dr. Khumalo was in the main, is there any proportionality in terms of the amount for the offset program spent in relation either to the pollution or whatever? Is there something that says you can implement offset program up to so much in terms of the cost based on the impact? Or is just something that people can just agree or do something low at a lower level, knowing that the impact is much, much higher? It was just to establish that, yes, thanks.
I'm sure you've got all the questions. Yeah, maybe let's get the questions. So for me, one on the issue of SO2, it does look like there's still no solution, and hence the proposal to establish a panel, which I think, I don't know what will the other members of the committee say, but from my side, I think I would support that. Because as I said earlier, it provides something which can be explained based on the evidence submitted and so forth. So that would be fine, and I think it's going to be very urgent that I think we do that. The roadmaps, for me, there's still a question mark on the roadmaps. I'm sure you'll comment on it and tell us whether this, are you satisfied? Because the issue keeps on coming up about postponement. It's not only postponement on SO2, it does look like there will be other postponement. Particularly, we will get from ESCOM, if it's something that we are not able to respond to now, ESCOM will just give us the actual details of when do they intend to decommission some of the old plants. And the issue of the offsets, I'm getting a sense that it's not been adequately responded to, because what we need to get a sense of is the progressive investment on the offset. Surely you come with you investigate, you come up with a technology. At some point you must roll out the investment and the implementation. And it can't be forever. And once you do the rollout, that's where you need to put your money away, put in more investment in that program, and which is something that we are not getting. I guess we'll get the details from the presentation by ESCOM and SASO.
But we are not getting a sense, although there is comfort from what Thuli is saying, that they are happy, but we don't get the same comfort because we can't talk to the figures and so forth. So I'm making our work very simple, DG, so that when you respond, you see what are the areas that still requires to be worked on. And maybe you can tell us the time frames going forward. Because as you know, we have agreed that it's an area that we will keep very close monitoring on. So we were intending to convene another meeting soon, probably in the next 2 months or so, but it will keep on being a permanent feature in our committee program, this one. DG?
Thanks, Chair. I was going to request 6 months on the work of the independent experts, but it does not mean we cannot report on progress in between. Just to make sure that they do remember, you need more evidence, you need them to verify also and then present a recommendation. So if we say we are now in February, appointment process by latest, we will still have to advertise. So by April, that panel could be in place, and then we can report to the committee in June and also around September. Thanks.
On this one, on our panel, okay.
Chair, I'd just like to suggest, and I like the idea of this panel, but you know, based on this disturbing report that we've got here, I mean, it really is disturbing, is that this committee has some input onto that committee, because I don't think it should be in the hands of the minister. To be honest, I'm not convinced the minister is committed to this, because just today she's decided with the Thabo Metsi that authorization will stay in place. Now that is against the landmark judgment of the High Court setting aside the authorization. So I would like to suggest that this committee has some input into that panel that he suggested. I like the panel, but I'm proposing we don't leave it in the hands of the minister. I'm not convinced of her commitment to solving the country's air problems.
Well, I don't know about Thabo Metsi. I don't have the information.
Okay. Can I just say, Chair, now I'm saying Minister, the committee will advertise, and then we probably can have an opportunity to interact, because legally the power is with her, with the Minister, to appoint a panel in terms of the National Environmental Management Act. And then when we have the names, we can also input the other additional names, so that process and the report, because nobody would want to be in an independent panel and want to compromise themselves. Normally they would present the facts as they see them, and they would also disagree. And like we had with the Committee of Inquiry on Rhino. So the things we don't like and the things we like, we will be able to get, and we can then make an assessment. So I think that would take care of Honourable Patton's concern. Thanks.
Okay, Honourable Kobe.
Chair, I agree with the panel, because to me, I think the committee should regard the situation we're in as a deadlock sort of between the industry and the department. They are not agreeing, and in fact, where we are, I don't think we can necessarily have a solution if we can't have a scientifically proven kind of basis why we should take this or the other route. If we are not able to say the industry may just not be committed without investigating what they're putting forward. So I think let's agree to that panel, and I think the period is reasonable. It is only then that perhaps we can have other views based on what will have come forward. We can then consider almost everything. Okay.
All right. I think the committees agree too. No one is saying they've got a problem. I think it's a good initiative to have that panel. It will help. It will help us go forward. I'm not sure, Honourable Peden, the extent to which we can be involved in the process, because we also don't want to be accused to be now interfering, taking over the executive functions. We must continue to perform our oversight role and leave the actual processes, for instance, about appointments. It may be a grey area for us if you want to involve ourselves in the appointment of people. It's definitely not our area of responsibility. We must just monitor whether that appointment is made and then request that there is reporting on it so that we can continue to exercise our responsibility of oversight. So I think the 6 months is fine. As I said, this issue will continue to be in our committee program. It's going to be a permanent feature. So meaning next month, next term, which is between April and June. So there will be an item around this issue on our program. So that's when we will then request briefing on the processes so that it continues to be there, and some of the concerns that Honorable Peden is having about commitment, we can then deal with them as we move along to say, is there progress, are things moving, reporting, and so forth. But of course, if it's a panel of experts, you need experts to be selected, and then the experts will obviously be given space to do their job. As professionals, they will come to whatever determination. But of course, as I said earlier, it has to be balanced. For instance, you also need environmentalists in there. Environmental activists, if you can say, so that the views can be balanced, you know, at the end of the day. So that message, I think you've got full support from the committee to then proceed with that. I don't know whether I would want to extend the scope to look at the roadmap, but I'm sure you'll deal with the terms of reference at some point. As I said, the issue of the roadmap remains an issue for me. Whether are we guaranteed full compliance, except for the issue that remains a thorny one on the SO2. That was just one issue, question. There are other questions which members have raised. Are you able to respond to them?
Yes, Chair. Starting with the statement where ESCOM maintains that ambient air quality monitoring network. So there were two questions on that point. The first one is whether the monitoring stations themselves are working or not. The monitoring stations are working, and they are reporting data live. I'm talking about the ambient monitoring stations. ESCOM's stations also report to the SACWIS. Our stations that are handled by the weather services are also working and they're maintained and they report. But on the second issue of whether there is compliance, it is not. The SO2 standard has four time frames. There's a 10-minute average that you need to comply with in the ambient air. There's a 1 hour, there's a 24 hour, and the 1 year. So when you take an annual average, you see compliance, but you don't breathe once a year. When you look at the other standards of 1 hour, 24 hours, there are exceedances. And if you look at the health impacts of SO2 then, for sensitive individuals, you can have acute reactions. So it's not something that can be ignored just because there is compliance to the annual standard, which is one number for
for the whole year. So that that is where we differ, because we are managing this every second, actually, not just once a year.
So that's the source of the differing conclusions between the departments. So they monitor annually. Also, they do annual averages. And because if all the monitoring stations are working, ESCOM's ones are working and the one that are administered by the department, and they all report to one institution, so all of them should be coming up with the same data. So how come two different conclusions between ESCOM and the department?
So when
that's the explanation we're giving.
Can let me clarify it further, Chair. We also report according to the annual standard when we do the state of air. So when you look at our own report, it does show a compliance because it's an annual. But when you look at further, at the 10-minute average, the one-hour average, and the daily average, there are no, because it's times of the, there will be days in the year where there are exceedances. But for the annual number, there is a compliance at the average level.
Yes.
So as the ESCOM statement is based on the annual average, but as I say, you don't read once a year. The topic will transfer, I will hand over to Brian. But perhaps on the issue of the offset, I think, thanks, Honorable Makube, we understand now, I think, a bit better what the question is about. Who approves the offsets? It's the licensing authority and the national air quality officer. We worked on those. And the industries had consulted the recipients, which would be the areas in their impact zone. They had been consulted because these technologies, I think maybe when they present and you see what type of technologies are being implemented, there's no way that someone can come into your house and install a ceiling and you have no idea that someone is coming to install. So perhaps there is dissatisfaction in the approach, but we base it squarely on impact zone, understanding that government also has a different commitment when you look at the strategy for addressing air pollution in dense low income settlements that should cover the other areas that are outside the impact zone of these facilities. And in we have the offset guidelines, which is the next point on the offsets, that indicates how you would then come up with an offset. And the way we have handled it is we have selected a pollutant, and we said in this area, address PM, particulate matter pollution. In this area, address SO2 pollution. And left it according to the industry to find ways of how to address those specific pollutants. So it's not so much how much it will cost. It is we want to see the improvement in the ambient air that is showing that the SO2 is coming down. As a result of that expectation, every offset project that has been implemented out there, there is a monitoring station there to track whether the SO2 is coming down as expected. And that's just to add, before the actual interventions were concluded, they did source apportionment studies to check what is the main source of this particular pollutant in this area, so that they then develop an intervention that is fit to address the actual problem, as opposed to just looking at ambient air and not understanding that we're measuring high levels of SO2, where exactly is this SO2 coming from. So I think the industry presentation will give more clarity on that. On perhaps the last point from me on the roadmaps, Chair, and whether one would say we are satisfied. I don't think satisfied would be an appropriate word, because there are different problems for different facilities. Some of them, if you look at in totality the postponements that were granted, some of them have already reached compliance way before the 2020 period. Your BPs, your totals, they have reached compliance. And for if I can make an example, ESCOM, there has been major changes from what was committed initially to what is being implemented now. And there has been delays, procurement, and so on and so on. Although for some of the plants, there is good progress, but for some, there are challenges. So I wouldn't give a statement that says overall there is satisfaction, because there are those areas of challenges. Perhaps if we look per plant and per technology proposed in the roadmap, we can then say for this one, we are confident that we'll get there. But for this one, we see a risk, and this is the nature of the risk. So there's no, for these two that are here today, Chair, there's not one answer that says yes, we are satisfied, or no, we're not satisfied, because there are different challenges. Perhaps you want to talk to the issue of the topo trucks.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Chairperson. In relation to the question that was raised by Honorable Khadere, this relates to the 75 skips target on Sasol's offset implementation plan and the throughput track. Based on our assessment of the last quarter report from Sasol, when we looked at what was submitted there, we were convinced that indeed the 75 skips were purchased. However, upon further assessment, we couldn't verify the existence of the triple trap. That's why we stated a statement there. But at the meeting of the 17th of January that we had with Sasol, we did raise this question, and they did provide an answer. However, we couldn't put it there because it's not there on the report. I think they would be able to answer in terms of the development surrounding that target. Thank you.
So I guess we will then pause, go to lunch if lunch is ready, and then come back and get presentation from ESCOM. And then after ESCOM, it will be SASO. Some of the questions will then be answered. If there are still outstanding questions, will be answered by the two ESCOM and then SASO. If there are other outstanding issues there. But of course, as we say, next term, there will be this item. We'll then have to monitor how far it's going. There's still some questions around the rolling postponement, which ESCOM must just prepare itself to answer those ones in your presentation. And of course, the offset, which is an area that they were also interested in. But of course, if there are still questions from the members to the department will still respond. It's not that because it's ESCOM now that's presenting, only ESCOM will have to respond to the questions. Welcome, Honorable Steenkamp. I was worried that as you enter in, you'll be raising your hand to ask a question. But I see you want to sit down and listen, and then, you know, get a sense of what the issues are. Because it happened some other day in one meeting. We had a four-hour discussion, and then there was somebody who just walked through the door. And that person was raising his hand. And I was wondering, what are you going to ask? Because you don't even know what you're talking about. But yeah, thank you. We did get your apology. So let's break. Okay, I'm told it's limited, but we'll share what is there. You know, Parliament doesn't have money, so whatever little is there, we'll share. Okay? So we'll be back at 1:30.